Welcome to the Women and Wealth Podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Today we're going to be talking about, well, you know what? I really don't know. Let's ask Esther. Esther, how are you?
I'm good, Eric. I'm excited for what we're talking about today.
Well, clue me in, would you? What are we talking about today?
The big reveal. Well, I wanted to go deeper into this discussion of life change as brought about by transition and really what it means to work with a client or a couple navigating transition in their life and dealing with change.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's interesting because we always think about business and personal financial being so different. You know, that business is very cut and dried and, you know, run by computer and smart people. But I came up on this research by Gallup. You will know the name Gallup.
Yep.
And they also look at behavioral economics, which behavioral economics takes into account how human beings interact with the information that's provided to them.
Mm-hmm.
And what they said, and this is, they looked at the research on behavioral economics and its impact on business. And what they concluded is that 70% of decisions are emotionally based, not rational. And to quote from this white paper that they have directly, it's our emotional, cognitive, and perceptual processes place limits on how rationally we can view the world around us.
Mm.
These limits have a profound effect on the decisions we make. And they were talking about businesses.
Wow. Wow.
So if that's true in business, it's certainly true in personal finance as well.
Definitely, if not higher than that percentage.
Yes. And it's and everybody thinks, oh, I should be able to figure all this stuff out. You know, I should be able to figure it out. And this is one of the reasons why it's really challenging to go the road alone during times of transition. Susan Bradley, who literally wrote the book, Sudden Money, and is the founder of the Sudden Money Institute, I love one of her sayings, and it is, when life changes, money changes. And when money changes, life changes.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it's such a simple statement, isn't it? But it encompasses what's been my experience and the experience of many clients over the years. None of us can stop change from occurring, but so often we're not prepared for a change. Even if we anticipate one coming on the horizon, it's really hard to prepare for it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
If we look at the word change, I wanted to ask you, Eric, I've been performing very informal, unscientific polls, but you are my guinea pig today.
Gladly.
When you think of the word change, what emotions come up for you?
Well, to be honest, lately, because there have been some major changes in my life, this song keeps playing. And I think you know what it is. Ch-ch-ch-changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not, yeah. I'm hoping nobody recorded that. Anyway. Yeah. My daughter moved out, right? She's 19 and
wow.
It's time for that change. And so now I and my wife are empty nesters and that change was difficult for Dad. She's only about 4 miles down the road. However, she's not here to hang out. She's not here to, she has the same sense of humor I do. So it's fun to see that. And so that emotion is kind of sadness. But in general, change, like you said, when you're looking forward to it or seeing it on the horizon, that to me, it kind of brings up some, a little bit of anxiety for me, depending on what that change is. I mean, there's positive changes, there's negative changes, but there's always kind of this building feeling toward it. And I don't want to just label all anxiety, but it can be make me a little anxious depending on what it is.
Right. And that's very consistent with what I've been, the feedback I've been getting too. People first there's a blank look and then they go fear or uh-oh.
Yeah.
or they go, oh no, something new. That's kind of cool. And in my own case, life changed a lot, obviously, when my mother-in-law and my husband, David, both passed away within weeks of each other 4 years ago. And that change absolutely generated a money change. All of a sudden, I was an inheritor. I was a financial steward. I take it really, really respectfully that I am a financial steward of the assets that my mother and dad-in-law both had nurtured for years. And I was also the recipient of David's life insurance. And at the same time, I not only lost David's income, I lost a family.
Yeah.
You know, his parents had been part of my life for well over 20 years. And not least of all, loss of plans for my future.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things got bundled up into those events.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's a huge, huge transition.
Yeah, it was a lot to navigate at once. And I'm someone who deals with money every single day of her. Well, we all deal with money every single day of our life. And
but you do it for a job, right? I mean, that's on another level too.
Right. It's what I come to work and help people with. And so thinking about money, when you think of the word money, Eric, then what emotions come up around money, that word?
Again, it depends on the scenario. If somebody comes up and says, here's a bunch of money, woohoo, right? That's a great thing. But thinking about bills and thinking about the different repairs on the house, again, there's some anxiety there. There's some apprehension, some frustration. Okay, what can I do to generate a little more income so I can make sure that I'm providing this? Or, I mean, we've all been in different stages at different points in our life, but I would say that it's back and forth between a good thing and a good emotion and a bad emotion.
Yes. Yeah. And it is emotional. There is money does come connected with emotion. As this podcast is coming out, we're in the throes of income tax time. Mm-hmm. And the word tax can certainly bring up a lot of emotions also. This is the first year that people will be experiencing their returns with the new tax law changes of 2018. And that is certainly, in our case in California, that will cause a number of people and clients that I'm seeing to pay more than they would have underneath the previous tax law. The stock market also, the movements mm-hmm. up and down, that has to do with money. If people are experiencing the market going down, there's a lot of fear. There's typically not, even though what's the phrase we have all heard from the time we've been little, buy low. But when the market is low, there's not an opportunity feeling there. There's an anxious feeling of loss.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then when it's up, people either, it's not unusual, it's been studied and studied and studied and measured that investors tend to buy high because they think, oh, I don't want to miss out. So money can certainly instigate really strong emotions. And the other one that came up in my informal poll, which I think is really valid, that money can bring about a feeling of shame that I don't have enough. I should have done better. Mm-hmm. I don't. And because of that, I don't want to talk to anybody about this.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. And it's a limitation. You know, I really, when we, you know, I have the podcast on financial termites. And as I heard that, I thought, oh my gosh, that's a great termite. Because just being ashamed about one's financial situation or feeling like they should know and not knowing causes people to stay in a place where it holds them back from really finding out, well, what is possible? What are the opportunities?
Yeah. And people think that they're the only ones that have made that mistake, or they're the only ones that have done something which they would, you know, perceive as stupid.
Right.
You know, I lost $150,000 in the market because I got these stock tips that I thought were just sure things. And my family told me about it and I was so excited. And then all of a sudden it tanked. How dumb was that I made that mistake? I should have just stuck with what I knew, you know, what my advisor had told me or whatever. And they're not the only ones.
Not the only ones at all, by any means. And I think one of the things as we look back on our lives and experience, our emotions about these two things can really shift from the perspective of time. Do you notice, Eric, when you look back over your life and you're thinking about the word change, do you notice a difference from where you are now to where you were at a younger time in your life?
Oh yeah. I mean, lots of opportunities. When change was happening when I was younger, it was exciting. It was something that changing from a teenager to an adult, from living at my parents' house to living on my own, you know, freedom, quote unquote.
Yeah.
That was a lie. It's not exactly freedom. But yeah, so it definitely changed over those years. And the word change, obviously, now, depending on the situation, can be a positive or negative. We want them to all be positive changes, but we know inevitably something like your situation can come up, and that change is not a positive thing. And it makes it very difficult to face and wake up every day and put that smile on your face and be able to say, okay, I'm going to face this change and do the best I can today. And I'm going to go to sleep tonight and I'm going to do the best I can tomorrow.
Right. And I'm going to be appreciative of whatever effort I put out there today.
Exactly.
To be the best I could. I think that's so true for me as well. When I look back on my life, when I was a teen, I loved the word change. Loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved finding a new job because I was, again, as been covered previously, I started working from a really young age. I was about 7 or 8. And as I got older into my, the big years of 12 and 13, mm-hmm,
yes,
and 14, I really enjoyed finding new jobs. I was a photographer for the local paper. I was a proofreader for the local paper. I worked restaurant. I cleaned houses. I was a bike shipper of bike parts. It just brought me into whole new worlds of people outside of my family home and school. And of course, it brought me money, which I really appreciated. And I loved moving and changing my community. As mm-hmm. we covered before, I left home not too long after my 17th birthday, moved to North Carolina, which was about 600-700 miles south of where I had... No, it wasn't 600 or 700. It was between 500 and 600 miles south of where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And it was so great learning and exploring. And now, when I look back on the experience of moving from, at that time, it was Arizona to California, it was heartbreaking. Mm. Even though David and I had just gotten married and we're starting a new life together, it was so heartbreaking leaving the community that I had come to really be a part of in Southern Arizona.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true with money. As a teen, I would tell you I hated anything to do with money.
Really?
I did. I felt like money controlled people, and it was like this big iron fist, even though I just wanted to work. You know, when I left home at 17, it wasn't about going to school. I was never going to school again. I wanted to work and just have my own money, but then live my life the way I wanted. And I felt like money was this evil force out to get me that others controlled.
You know, that's so interesting that you say that, because I had a completely different experience. And that goes back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, the stock market. If somebody was living through the time and investing in the time of 05, 06, and then through 07, 08, and 09,
right,
they are living today with a whole different experience than people mm-hmm. that just started investing in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so that drawing on those experiences, for me as a teenager, I loved the thought of money, the word money, because I had a paper route. And to be honest, since junior or especially in junior high, I had way too much money for junior higher to have. Right, my paper routes would basically generate a few $100 a month for me. And that's ridiculous. And I blew all that money. I had fun with my friends. I bought donuts all the time. I did everything. And so it didn't bother me at all. But yeah, I mean, but also I was very stupid with my money. So obviously I was just out to have a good time and no changes had come yet. So with that, but we draw off our experiences differently and it affects our today, just knowing what we did back then in positive and negative ways.
Right. And now I see it much, much differently. I see it as a tool, as a way to obtain things that are important to me, how I want to lead my life and support me in that. So that's come about just through different understanding, through education and experience and opening myself up to learning. Mm-hmm. But I will have to admit there are times where due to my own history with money, fear still comes up that there's not enough. And it more shows up, not in my personal, but in my life as a business owner.
Mm-hmm. Esther, I agree 100%. But I've got to ask you, what do you do when you have those concerns come up for yourself?
Well, I like to say I eat my own cooking. I talk a lot with clients, obviously, about living their best life. I really that again is a risky proposition, because when you really go for something, you're letting go of some mm-hmm. security typically. That's why we don't risk more, because we're afraid of losing what we have. But that's what I did when I launched this business, for example. And I continue to eat my own cooking, of not trying to figure it all out myself. Yeah. That is, again, another termite that we sit and try and figure out, well, how can I get over this fear? I use a support network, just like I am a support for my clients. I'm part of their team. I use a support network that I have built around my business. These are excellent consultants that I use for business planning. It's a 3 distinct professionals, one of whom I've worked with for going on 19 years. So they've been with That's me great. Through a lot yeah. of business change, but then they're excellent in their areas, but they're really thoughtful listeners. Basically, I'm honest and open about who I am, what I want to do. They look at all the financials, the numbers. They are engaged in some cases completely with the staff here, and they give really excellent feedback. And what I notice over and over, it's really divorced from that self-critical negative nature that I can have on myself that can hold me back, whether it's that same shameful feeling, not good enough, mm-hmm. I should know this feeling. And they get me pumped up again. They get me excited about what is happening here. They really move me through some of those challenging emotions.
That's great. I think we all need that in our life.
Absolutely. I just find it over and over again that if I think, okay, now I can figure this out by myself. And that thought lasts a lot less, a lot shorter time mm-hmm. than when I connect with one of these consultants and we get through it. And it's amazing what in 2 hours can really shift.
Yeah.
So we all have these emotions around money and change. And no wonder, if you put them together as a result of a life transition, you put change and money and that what's going on, it's understandable that people don't necessarily know how to navigate all of that independently, the most effectively for themselves.
Yeah. Esther, last year you passed your test and you became a certified financial transitionist. You have unique training around change and personal planning. What do you do that is different from any other advisor out there?
Well, there are a lot of competent advisors out there, certainly. And an individual or a couple who's going through transition could certainly have a financial advisor on board with them now, and they may be doing a very competent job technically. They're doing, typically it's focused on portfolio investments. So they may be allocated correctly for them. They may be well diversified. They may be invested in good quality things, and the advisor is competent to talk with them about that. But if they're not attuned to the stages of transition, and there are 4 very distinct stages, and with those stages, there's different emotions that can come along and come about along the way, then the technical aspect really won't help the client enough. And this has been especially true with women who have a financial advisor, and the financial advisor often just sticks with the technical only and doesn't go into more of the, let's set that aside for a moment and let's just talk about what you're experiencing in terms of if retirement's coming up, or as you said, your child is leaving home. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even one to encourage every single advisor to do that, because as I learned years ago in when I was studying counseling and active listening therapeutic techniques in my college experience, I heard a wonderful piece of advice from one of my professors that I've never forgotten. It's don't ask a question if you're not prepared for the answer. So financial transitionists are prepared not only with really good questions, but ways to navigate the answers.
Yeah.
So what we do that's different is to have that really in-depth understanding of how human beings respond to change and help our clients process through that change from that place of understanding.
Esther, it sounds a lot like therapy in a way. Would you equate it to therapy, or I mean, would you draw some similarities to that?
Well, I'll draw some similarities, because it's not unusual that clients will say, oh my gosh, I feel like you're my therapist.
But you have a couch?
Respect.
Sorry.
I really respect professional therapists, and yeah. I am not one of them. It's not therapy. I certainly am familiar with therapy because I've been actively utilizing a professional therapist for many years. She helped David and I through challenging times in our marriage and certainly helped it be the really wonderful marriage that it grew into being. Mm-hmm. And she certainly was there for me when David died and helped me. Again, she's on Team Esther for sure.
Yeah.
But what I do, it does borrow from therapy in that it's really important to listen, as opposed to the technical, when we're just explaining and showing and diagramming and showing graphs and charts. In the active part of transition work, you're doing a lot of listening and you're not just throwing out answers out there as you are in, typically when you're just in the technical role. And it's really important to create that safe space for the client, like in therapy, mm-hmm. So that clients are comfortable opening up and telling what's really true for them, to be respectful of what they're saying and then maintain a perspective on what they're experiencing. So to really listen to what's going on for them and help them have ownership for what they're going through and what they want to create in our lives. Mm-hmm. There's a phrase in our financial transitionist work what we talk about. We have to keep giving the work back to the client.
Hmm.
And I don't go to a therapist for them to fix me. That professional there is there to help me root out what is undermining my own abilities to really perform better in my own life.
Esther, you said something there that's very interesting to me, and I'd like to explore it a little bit. You said you always have to give back the work, if I'm quoting you correctly. You always have to give back the work. What does that mean? I mean, they're hiring you to do the work. in a way, they're hiring you to do the work, but what does that mean?
Well, they often come, they're hiring us for technical work. Often that's typically what people, even if they know, okay, Esther is familiar with her transition. That's nice because I'm going through transition. So she can help put together a good financial plan. She's a fiduciary, so she's not going to try and sell me something. She'll put together a good investment plan. All that is true. But what I mean is I cannot create Esther's plan for them. Mm-hmm. I cannot say, well, you're this age, you have these assets, what you need to do in terms of gift charitably is this much, this is how much travel you need to do, this is when you need to retire, this is how you need to live your life. It's like, no, who would do that?
Yeah.
It's really about their ability, again, to engage so that we can together collaboratively navigate what is really most important to them. I have exercises that they can work through independently. We do together, but the client needs to own what direction or course they want to set. Again, when one goes to therapy, if one's going with what I would call the right attitude, it's not going to the therapist, whether it's a marital issue or an individual issue. I know it's not unusual when one goes for couples counseling. It's like, oh, good. The therapist will fix them.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you see what I'm dealing with here? Now,
that's right.
Fix it. That's a very common feeling. But again, with financial planning, yes, I certainly bring a very strong responsibility to give feedback on the course that they're charting, to give reality check, to provide that technical expertise, but it still needs to be their plan.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The one thing with this is it does take some time to get there.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to come in and say, well, I've got these assets, this income, this is what's going on, just figure it out. Obviously, as I've just mentioned, it doesn't work that way. The other part is it takes time to sort some of these things through.
Mm-hmm.
And I've covered before in other podcasts how we navigate splitting out what's most important to deal with. So we're not leaving our clients in limbo over really time-sensitive things. But when, again, going through changes as the listeners reflect back on changes in their life, as you and I have talked about the changes in our life, there's a process of change. It takes time. And for a change in money, to unfold in a really healthy, supportive way, which is my job with the technical expertise, it really helps a client make those best decisions. So they're not making decisions 70% emotionally and 30% yeah. rationally. There's more of a blend so that those decisions can really be the foundation to support a very fulfilling life moving forward.
Yeah. Esther, I've worked with a lot of advisors, and any advisor will tell you, well, I listen to my clients. I listen to what they want, what they need, what their dreams are, what their goals are. But you and I have been working together for quite some time, especially with this new role you have as a certified financial transitionist. One of the beautiful gifts that you personally have is that you don't just listen to what your clients have to say, you're listening to what they're not saying. And I think that's so important because it brings back those emotions, like you were talking about earlier, like we spoke about, people have shame in their life about money, about decisions that they've made. Mm-hmm. And so they're hesitant to talk. Mm-hmm. Even as comfortable as you can possibly make them to have these conversations, that you can help them build that better future, build the goals in that they want to build into their future. There's sometimes they're not going to want to say and spill everything. And so I think one of the best things that you do is you listen to what they're not saying and help them take that time. Again, going back to that time piece, take that time to be able to open up and finally say, okay, here are some things that I've really made some mistakes on. I really need to get over this, change that behavior. How can you help me do that? Mm-hmm. And to be able to hear the gaps in what they're saying is, I think it is even a greater skill than most people have. And that's just because of all that training that you've done. So kudos to you. I love the fact that you can do it. And I know that your clients have been benefited tremendously by it.
Well, thank you so much. It is really important because at the end of the day, we're all going to do what we're going to do. So it's best if it's on the table what we're going to do so I can do my best in terms of supporting people to get to where they really want to be.
Absolutely. Fantastic. All right. Looking forward to tax day, or at least getting it over with. Getting it over with. Thank you all for listening to the Women in Wealth podcast today with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This will make it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.